I'll be too nervous to. I'll probably be lost for words.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Lost for Words DraftKings podcast. I am joined, as ever, by my co-host, Matt Vincenzi. Matt, hello.
Hey, Tom. Both of us, a little bit of heartbreak last week with Harmon not being able to finish that one with some makeable chances. But, hey, we got beat by Scottie Scheffler. What can you do?
That was what I told myself on Sunday night. Like, if you're going to get beat, you're going to get beat by the best player in the world who somehow managed to shoot 8-under whilst having a, you know, recovering from a stiff neck the day before or 2 days before, right? Don't necessarily, well, I do mind that, but I don't necessarily mind if I'm going to lose. That's how I want it to be done. Harmon had his chances, right? Like, first two holes, I think he kind of set the tone of you should have made those. Even the third hole, I think he had a chance and didn't do it. And then when he did finally sort of rally back after that, he looked really good. And then just 16th, he pulls his drive into the dirt and that's it, right? Into the pine straw and doesn't birdie that hole. And he kind of loses the chance there, you think. But he still had the birdie chance on one of the last two holes and was actually really unlucky to not get a birdie on the last hole, I think. So overall, I'm pretty happy with Brian Harmon.
Yeah, I mean, 12, he should have birdied too. I mean, 12 and 16 were playing as the two easiest holes of the day, and he didn't birdie either of them. Not to mention the misses from 6 and 7 feet on 1 and 2. So that's obviously what did him in. But the performance overall was good. I mean, he outplayed Schauffele and Clark on Sunday.
Schauffele was noticeably nervous as soon as he hit the front. I mean, obviously he was in front on going into the round, but like when he kind of went a little bit clear when Clark was sort of dropping off of him, he felt like he almost needed someone to stay with him the whole way, I think. And then Harmon starts coming, Scheffler starts, as soon as Scheffler kind of tied him, I thought, ah, that's probably him done. Then he stiffs it on 17 and you think, okay, here we go, like he's really found it. Misses, and it just felt so obvious that he was going to miss that putt. Like, it just looked nervy. Then Wyndham Clark hits a brilliant shot on 17. Strange with Clark, like most of the round really disappointing, I think that's pretty fair to say, and then sort of hung in there more so than he would have done the last couple of years. Like, I think he would have folded like a lawn chair if he'd kind of started like that in the past. So I think there's got to be a little bit of credit in the sense of how he fought back. But ultimately not good enough on Sunday. It shouldn't come down to that kind of unfortunate part, which he's obviously always going to point to, like, oh, if I'd made that part, I've got to the playoff, but probably wasn't beating Scheffler anyway. What are your thoughts on that final round from Scheffler and from Schauffele and Wyndham Clark? We know what the thoughts are on Scheffler.
I think Clark, I mean, I was a little annoyed with the stomping down on the grass before the drop, and in conjunction with all the things that have happened over the last few months with him and then also last year's US Open, felt like that was definitely intentional. And I think a lot of people on social media actually felt that way too. And another thing on Clark I'll get to in a second, but Xander is a loser. I mean, he's won before and he will probably win again, but he does have something, I think, a deep innate
characteristic
to lose when he's in a good position to win. I mean, he will convert some because he's just so talented and he's really a great player, but I think he wants, it's like he can't help himself from doing something to lose the thing. 17, that missed putt, I mean, I know some people are missing that putt that day. It was a bit of a tricky read, but he should have made that putt. I mean, he should have made that putt.
You can't do it in contention, right? I think the thing with people, so they'll look at Xander and like for his first couple of seasons on the PGA Tour, excellent Tour Championship win, Greenbrier Classic win, wins WGC, and you think, okay, he's this great player. He's got this fantastic track record in the US Open, wins the Tournament Championship 2019. You think, right, you know, trajectory suggests he's going to go on. There's just a couple of playoffs in between all that. And then doesn't do anything for a couple of years, wins that the team thing with Cantlay and doesn't really mean too much. And then 2022, he goes, what, was it back-to-back starts at Travelers and the Scottish Open, right? Like, pretty decent performances. But like you say, I think it's almost just talent taking over. And you don't want to discredit someone. Like, if you're talented and talent is over, then so be it, right? But I could never look at Xander Schauffele after Sunday and go, do you know what, I want to back him at 7-1, or I want to back him in a major at 20-1. Like, the guy is, and look, we could get 3 months down the line and I might back him for the Masters, I don't know, but in my head I can't think of backing him in a major. I just can't see it. I think the second and thirds that you've seen from him might be the peak of his major career. He just doesn't get it at the moment. And look, he's only 30, and I think that's the one thing. Like, because someone has an innate inability to really put their foot down in contention at this stage of their career doesn't mean that's always going to be the case. But for the most part, it has been, even with the wins that he's had.
Yeah, he's younger than Clark, and Clark's, everyone says, he's a young up-and-comer.
Yeah.
You know, for me with Clark, and this is the thing that I don't like, it's okay that I thought he was kind of cheating in that situation. And it's funny because 2-3 years ago, I was allowed to dislike players on the PGA Tour, and everybody was. But now, because of the live PGA Tour divide, if you say anything negative about any PGA Tour player, people want to make it about, well, at least he's not playing 54 holes. Okay, that's fine. Nobody's talking about that. There can still be heroes and villains on the PGA Tour. Like, when Reed's on the PGA Tour, people love rooting against him. And I think the PGA Tour needs that. But their fan base is just so hell-bent against making everything a battle against Liv that you don't realize, you can still dislike players on the PGA Tour and have guys you root for and guys you root against. Like, that's what makes this entire thing fun. That's what makes viewership better. That's what makes it more intense down the stretch. Like, so if I'm trying to shit on Wyndham Clark just to have fun, it's not because I'm pro-Liv or anything. I'm not even talking about Liv. I'm not mentioning it whatsoever. You can like and dislike players on the PGA Tour. Sorry.
There's the people that hate Liv care way more about it than I do.
Yeah.
That's what I don't necessarily like. I look, cards on the table. The reason I like elements of Liv is because of the interactions I've had with individuals on there. For the most part, I've had Peter Uline on the podcast a couple of times. He gave me very detailed reasons why he went to that tour. They're not applicable to everyone. They're very, you know, I mean, the money is applicable to everyone. They didn't hide away from that. But his specific reasons are only really applicable to him. And I don't really care. I honestly don't care whether people decide to go to the Live or the PGA Tour. How I feel about John Rahm hasn't changed. I literally just do not care. As long as they're there for the majors and probably with this merger, they'll probably be there for 5 or 6 events on top of that a year. I don't really care. So the fact that it's actually almost annoying now that we keep getting this, let's just shit on it. Because if it's as shit as people say it is, if Liv's that bad, don't give it the attention. I honestly don't understand this need to keep, I don't go around going how terrible German football is. And that's a terrible example, right? But people, or the MLS, people will go to the MLS at the end of their careers, right, and pick up a paycheck, and everyone would say, oh, the people only go to MLS when their careers are done and they're just there to make money. Actually, if you think about it sensibly, if I was an English football player, soccer player for some of the American listeners, and I had the opportunity to go and live in New York for the last 2 or 3 years of my football career, or LA or Florida or wherever, I'd probably take it. And I don't really give a shit whether people think it's because I'm not as talented anymore or not. There's more money on the line and a better probably place to live. I'm all over that. They're going to move from Newcastle, England, over to, you know, LA. I think it's a nice lifestyle change. So that's my thought on the live debate in that respect. A couple of things I don't like about Wyndham Clark. I don't like this putt, the caddy putter situation.
I don't like that either.
I don't get it. I don't get how he's actually allowed to do it. There's obviously no rule against it, so that's fine. But people get so caught up about broom handle putters, right? And there are certain people that, you know, that have been named in the past, I don't need to keep rehashing history, that do look like they're anchoring. I don't actually really care about that, because in my head I'm like, look, anyone can go and do that with their putter. So if they want to do it and take away the feel to a certain extent, then go and do it. I don't think there's a competition edge. Some people are better suited to hit him with a regulation putter. Some people are better to longer. If you think it's that much easier to go and do it, like I said about Matt Fitzpatrick 4 years ago, when he was like, oh, anyone can go and just gain distance and be a better player, go and do it then. He's gone and done it, won a major championship. So I can't work out in my head how a caddy is allowed to just go and size up a putt with a wedge, do this. I don't really get it. I don't even necessarily love the fact that caddies can stand behind a player and go hit it here. Like I think it should be down to, I think the caddy should be able to do a recce of the course in practice rounds and look at breaks and put them in a yardage book. But I think that's then when it should stop. I don't even get what he's doing. He's basically saying hit it here and he has to look at it again. That almost says to me that Wyndham Clark's not a good putter in his own right, which I don't think is true. So don't give people excuses to think you're a worse putter than you are. I don't really get it. I don't really understand.
Yeah, I think it's a bad look. I hate it. I hate the look of it. I think caddies are doing way too much on the greens in general. I think that takes part of the skill away from the game. It's like, I don't want the tournament to come down to whose caddy is the best at reading putts.
Yeah. And look, like there's been times in the past, like when I talked about Scottie Scheffler in the lead up to his first Masters win, I was sort of saying, look, having Ted Scott on the bag, knowing that he knows how to read Augusta Greens because of Bubba's wins, that to me is a skill in the sense that, like, he knows how the greens work at Augusta National. He's seen them all. We can say to Bubba, say to Scotty, this Bubba had this putt, and this is what it's going to do. Scotty should then go and read it himself and hit it himself. And I don't really get this kind of involvement. So I think that's a wider issue. I think there's so much about putting, and then everyone talks about the reason they should limit fields is because of slow play, and like we need to crack down on that. No, we don't. We need to stop people doing 6 hour rounds. It's very simple. There's a select group of players that slow everybody else down. And that is because these caddies are doing aim point. They're laying down on the greens. They're half basically putting for them. They're talking about things way too long. They're standing over balls for 40 seconds of the 10 seconds. Actually, someone got penalised for that, didn't they? At the players, I can't remember who it was now, got penalised for that over the weekend, standing over the ball too long. Just weird. Like I feel like when these criticisms come out, we miss the overall point. And the field show, I mean, last week was the best tournament of the year by far, and it should be because it's the Players' Championship. We had the best finish because of the people that kind of couldn't quite get the job done. Scheffler shows his brilliance, right? And that's what you want. But no one cared about the fact that X amount of players have missed the cut and X amount of players have got through the cut. It was a full field event with a cut, and everyone loved it. A lot of people then said, this is why you should have a cut. This is why you should have 144 players, whatever it was. I still think if you had that finish at the Arnold Palmer on Sunday, no matter how many players in the field, you then say the Arnold Palmer's the best finish, right? But it does go to show that you don't need to limit the field size to get the better tournaments. It's just dependent week on week as to what is important. And like, Scottie Scheffler needs to break through and do what he does on Sunday to make it exciting, I think.
Yeah. I think that's mostly true, although I definitely am in favor of full fields and a cut. I think it makes the tournament much, much better.
I prefer it, but what I would say is, like, to counter my own point, I think if you have that finish between those three players on Sunday at Bay Hill, then you probably forget about the fact you're annoyed about the 144 players and missed cut. Like, I think it still all comes down to what happens on the back nine on Sunday regardless, right? But I do think that even like someone like Sam Burns, who was like on the cut line or one above the cut line and then had a great Saturday round, vaults himself in, not even to contention, but into top 10. So you can't do that if there's you know, limited players, right? So that would be that. And then the other thing that irked me, and I don't want to do it personally to him because I've levied enough criticism of this guy. I'm softening on him a lot. I think he's done a lot over recent years. They're so desperate to say how good Rory McIlroy's been that I think it actually diminishes when he plays his best golf. Like, they were saying, and this is a little bit of a roundabout way of saying things, but they were saying that, oh, you know, he'd had 26 birdies at the Players. He's going to be the only player to have ever had 26 birdies in a tournament and finish outside the top 20. That didn't happen in the end. He finished 19th. They were like saying that he'd broken a record with the most birdies because he'd hit 25. Well, that wasn't true because Harold Varner had done it 2 or 3 years previously, so he'd matched the record. Then on top of that, Sam Ryder's actually on the course having more birdies than him. Matt Fitzpatrick has 26 birdies as well. It does not matter how many birdies you have if you have the amount of bogeys and triple bogeys or double bogeys that Rory McIlroy had. So let's not focus on the fact that he was a birdie machine. Let's focus on the fact that for large parts of the tournament, he just wasn't good enough. Yes, I get that you're saying he's done well enough to make birdies, but why are we using that as a positive for him? We should be saying his all-round game wasn't there, and we should just be honest about his week, I think.
Yeah, and I think it speaks to the overall notion on the PGA Tour that people want to see birdies and hear about birdies and talk about birdies, which isn't true. I mean, I think the real fans want to see the golf course challenge these players and the players rise to the challenge and have it be difficult. And that, I think that's a good segue to this week, that hoping that that's what we get.
Yeah, and I think there was a couple of people in commentary, and it'll be different for UK listeners and US listeners, but it might have been Rich Beam or someone that sort of said, like, look, it doesn't matter if you have 26 birdies if you're not good enough for the rest of it. So there was enough balance to say that's not good enough. There was just so many people like, oh, it's fantastic, what a week it could have been, all this sort of stuff. It wasn't, at the end of the day. Like, it wasn't good enough. So not a shit on Rory. He can't control a narrative around him. But this desperation to make it seem like he was better than he was seems a bit strange to me. Let's go into the tournament in hand, Matt. Valspar Championship, Copperhead course at Innesbrook. I think we know at this point what we need. It's a second shot golf course. It does demand, even with that said, it demands plenty off the tee. I think you've got to be good basically all round. I think that's important every week, obviously. But true enough here, like, you need to be on point with your tee screen game. You can't come here just trying to chip and putt your way to a result. It doesn't happen that way. It's relentless. It demands plenty off the tee. And interestingly, Matt, I think it's one of those tournaments I don't necessarily love the, oh, they did this in par four scoring, they did this in par five scoring, right? Like, I mention it in most of my written stuff just to give the actual data there. But I thought the par five scoring this week was pretty important. Like, Burns won at 17 under in 2021 and 2022. In 21, he shot 15 under par on the par five. So he made up basically all of his score that week in par five scoring. 10 under in the second year, so it's a bit more balanced. Paul Casey, 2019, he won at 8 under par, shot 15 under par on the par fives. Wow. And then Taylor Moore, 7 under par on the par fives, winning at 10 under par overall. So I do think it's one of those ones where you and look, the difficulty with something like par five scoring is, I think you can say you need to take advantage of the par fives at the Valspar. I don't think that means you can run to people that are playing the par fives well overall, because not all par fives are created equally. If you don't know how to make birdies at the par fives at the Copperhead, but you can do it in Mexico, it's pretty pointless, right? So I think what you need to do with that information is, how did these players play the par fives when they've been at the Copperhead course? And if it's been terribly or not good enough, that's probably the reason why they haven't contended in the past.
Right. Yeah, I think that's all true. I also, to add to some points you made on the golf course, I think off the tee is definitely relatively important, but I do think the longer hitters are going to be forced into hitting shorter shots under the fairways. And then I think the biggest difficulty of this course is the approach shots. I mean, you're getting a lot of these shots going to be from over 175 yards, which to me takes a lot of the flukiness out of the game. So that's why you see, even though the fields always haven't been that strong here, most years, especially when some good players are playing, the good players do seem to do well when they're here.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's just one of those ones where the other things I've got here, Matt, are the tee to green stuff is very obvious. Like, I almost feel like a bit of a fraud mentioning how important tee to green is each week, right? But here in general, no winner since 2019 has finished outside the top five in tee to green for the week. Bermuda putting, obviously, has been overseeded a little bit. That's important. But course history is important. 7 of the last 12 winners had finished 12th or better at the course before winning. Taylor Moore and Charles Schwartzel both won here after missing the cut on debut, but they're the only players to do that in this 12-year span. And Gary Woodland's the only player to win this tournament on his first start. And then obviously people will look at 5 of the last 12 winners have picked up their first PGA Tour win here, but 11 of those 12 had also won at a different level. So I don't think you want to be finding people that never won on the Korn Ferry, which will actually look funny when I talk about one of my picks later, but you want someone who's kind of got that winning mentality before coming to this. And then 11 of the last 12 winners top 10 finish on the season already, or two plus, was eight of the last 12 winners had two plus top 10s before winning here on the season. So, as you said, you know, the good players coming into form is really important.
Yeah, which speaks to your point too. I don't think it's the type of event where you're going to come in and find your game. You better have it when you get here.
Exactly that. All of that said, Matt, let's look into the top of the DraftKings board. Xander Schauffele 11-2. I think it's very clear how we feel about that one. Sam Burns 10-9. Thomas 10-4. Jordan Spieth 10-2. Do you feel a need to play any of those?
Yeah, I mean, I feel a need to play Justin Thomas. I think this is a great buy low spot for him in terms of ownership and public perception, considering he missed a cut last week. He has those top 10 finishes on the season that you're looking for. He's having a good season. He had two events where he, you know, fucked around and missed the cut, but his numbers were great. He led the field in approach after two rounds, despite missing the cut, which, I mean, he's hitting his irons great. I think the long irons gonna be really important here. The chipping and putting, I think, is less important here. You just gotta hit those greens and reg, which I think he will do at this place because of how the shape that his iron game is and the fact that he can club down off the tee if he needs to do that. So I think this is a great buy. And, you know, a correlation I'm making here is the players who have won after a long drought have done it at a place that they love when they're one of the best players in the field. A couple of examples. When Jason Day won in Texas, he had great course history. He was like 18-1. Everyone said, his odds are too short. He's playing better, but can he actually win? He wins. Jordan Spieth, when he won, the first time he won in multiple years was, where's that, Charles Schwab, Byron Nelson?
Byron Nelson, yeah, one of those. And two.
So that's one of his courses. He's at short odds. Everyone says he doesn't win in 2 years. How can you bet him at 16-1? Ricky Fowler, when he won, he was 18-1. I remember scoffing at the price. I was like, yeah, he makes sense. He likes the course, but he hasn't won in 2 years. So I think this is that spot for JT.
Yeah, I think there's a decent amount of feel to that. I think if you're ever going to play Sam Burns at such a high price and low odds in the betting market, I think it has to be here. I think with both Burns and Thomas, their disappointments in the players, I think, could be slightly overlooked. I think that's a very volatile golf course that can lead to that. I think Burns had to get aggressive and, you know, it didn't work out on Sunday. So I think it'd be between those two. I'm not interested in Xander and I'm not actually interested in Spieth. So 11-2 and 10-2 either side of them. Brian Harman's harder to get away from, I think, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, coming into his course history is weird. He's a fifth place, but he's missed a cut the other three times.
I think he had another decent finish. He had four missed cuts going into that fifth, and then a missed cut last year as well. But he's also been 14th and 25th here back in the day. And I mean, he was great ball striking, wasn't he, last week? I mean, he led the field in approach. I think he led the field in tee screen potentially as well, where he's certainly up there. So, yeah, I think for me, with Harman, it was difficult to kind of get away from 7th in tee screen, first in approach last week. So, with that and a little bit of course history, I kind of liked him. I would play him second behind one of those that we mentioned.
Yeah, so on those four, I think Spieth is not going to be relatively high owned, which makes sense. He's really expensive for the way he's playing right now. But I think in order, that'll be... Burns is going to be really popular. He's going to be pushing 25-26%, most popular of all these guys. Shoffley's going to be second there. I think he's going to be in a similar range, maybe 24-25%. So that's who people are looking to, both Burns, then Shoffley, in that order. And then Thomas is coming in third of that crew, and he's going to be more in the 18-20% range. So that makes my case for Justin Thomas feel even better.
Yeah, no, I get it. And I think Brian Harman sort of comes even below them, right?
Like, yeah, yeah.
So I think that's fine. I think starting Thomas Harman, or, you know, if you're going to go with Burns, and then Burns Harman. I couldn't advocate for Burns just from pure ownership, but I do think if you're ever going to play Sam Burns at a place, it's going to be here, right?
Anything on the emotional letdown on Harman? Do you feel like he maybe?
I think so.
No, okay.
I think he's fairly solid between years.
Yeah.
So, no, I think with Harman at this point in his career, I was thinking about this the other day, randomly walking to the train station, does this every now and then. When you think about Brian Harman, I think I'm pretty sure I've heard interviews of like him just being absolutely ruthless at college level, and that just not translating to his PGA Tour career. And it, for whatever reason, like it's happened now. But maybe this like this version of Brian Harman we've got now, not the one that's just gone and won an Open Championship by six strokes, but it's one that's, you know, relatively in the mix quite often and has at the very peak of his powers won a major, I think might be here to stay. I think it's just one of those ones that it just took him a while to get there.
Yeah, I think depending on the golf course, right? I mean, Players Championship and TPC Sawgrass is a perfect golf course for him. And he's shown, but API, I guess, wasn't, and he was still good there. Yeah. So.
I generally think that there's just been, I know what I am and who I am and an acceptance, right? And I think he had many years of let down, but I think it's very easy to forget he beat Zach Johnson at John Deere, and Zach Johnson was probably at the peak of his powers on the golf course he really likes. He beat Dustin Johnson at the Wells Fargo, and he beat all the great names at the Open last year. So when he has won, he's done it really impressively. And, you know, this is a guy that not only won a major, he's finished second at the US Open and that as well. So I think overall, like I know he was 150-1 short, or whatever, he was 125-1 in places last year for the Open, but and it, you know, was a surprise to certain people. But I think this just it might be his level now. So interested to hear that. Cam Young, Matt. He sticks out, I think, from a sort of ball striking perspective. He's been really good with his irons recently. Just doesn't feel like a good golf course.
Yeah, I mean, I just think I can see both sides of it on the bright and on the positive side. I think he's playing good. His numbers have been really good. He's hitting the ball really well, probably as good as anyone in the field. And then, you know, he seems like he's going to win soon. So I get why people might be going to him. On the other end, it just feels like this golf course takes his best asset out of his hands, which is the fact to absolutely pound the ball, you know, 330, 340. I don't think he'll be able to do that here. So I think low scoring or high scoring could help him. So I'm kind of on the fence with him.
I think about people. So this goes to that classic thing, right? Of like I've said there, I don't think it's necessarily a good golf course for him. And that's not just because driver can be taken out of your hand, but also just getting up and down. I don't necessarily trust him that much. But when you think back to, you know, Jason Kokrak play well here so many times, he feels like a similar sort of player to that, where like the asset is his driving. He can flash his irons as he has done in recent weeks, and it might just be a case of he can club down and do well here. So I'm interested in Cam Young, maybe more so than I have been in previous weeks.
Yeah, and one thing I will add that I think we probably should have said at the top that I was just thinking of, I think the wind is going to be a big, big, big factor this week. It looks like it's going to be starting Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the wind is going to be blowing. Like I do think we see a single digit winner, and I think we should be looking for players who are comfortable in the wind.
I think not only that, Matt, but also players that have played here before. Like I think if you've played here six times before or five times before, you've probably had these conditions at some point here, whereas some people that played here once or missed the cut or whatever may not have faced those conditions yet. So I think that's maybe why we just see such good course history performances here. It's just those interchanging weathers.
I want to get some wind stats up as well.
I like it. I think
the viewers might be interested in.
While you're doing that, I'm going to talk about the evolution of Nick Taylor, who I think is, I mean, Matt, I've sort of mentioned him probably three or four times now this season of just thinking he's a little bit underpriced. I mean, we've seen him in the sort of sevens and sixes and times, and that even came after the win in Phoenix. I think he's properly rated this time. Like he's 9-1 in the DraftKings pricing. He's 35-1 in the betting market. I think people are sort of catching up and costing it on, but I still think there's enough value in him where I think he's a really good play this week. And look, he was 24th on debut here, 10th going into the final round. He's been 24th here, where he was 6th going into the final round. And his best finishes overall 10th last year, where he's really solid. He got better each day. So I think Nick Taylor is there as someone I generally do believe can win. And I don't think that about too many players. I think Harman, Cam Young and Taylor in this range. I don't think Minwoo Lee, Finau, Sung Jae Im win this week. Or Spieth.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. He's definitely is a grinder who can win a tough event. I feel like he has balls if it comes down to it, which he's shown in the past.
Do you think he's a different player now? Or do you just think it's just who he has been for his whole career, and it just happens to be that the wins are coming in a, you know, do you think he, like, he's, I think he's genuinely evolved a bit. Maybe it's just purely confidence, right? He'd won early on at the Sanderson Farms, but then had 6 years between that win at Pebble, and then it feels like he wins the biggest event for him outside of a major is the Canadian Open, wins that, and then finds confidence to go one better at the Phoenix Open. I don't know if it's just a wave, but I also just think he's potentially just better than, like, he's ever been given credit for. And this was he was a former number one in the world amateur rankings, like, early on in his career. Like, it's not completely surprising that he's gone on to play like this.
Yeah, I think what you said is spot on, and the answer is a combination of those things. He has evolved because of that confidence. Yeah. And I think now he's learned that he can win playing the way he plays. He doesn't have to add distance off the tee. I think he's comfortable who he is. He's has that big sigh of relief from a big win, especially in his home country. And I think that's allowing him to show his full potential.
And two top iron weeks so far already in 2024, a couple of other top 21 finishes. One of those was last week at the Players. A little bit of an ejection, I guess, over the weekend last week. I think he was second going into the weekend and didn't hang around. But I still think Taylor's there to win. Win stats, Matt. Got anything for us on that?
Yeah, I do. A couple of guys who I really liked going into it already that I'm absolutely thrilled about. I'll start with the guys we've already talked about.
Yeah.
And then when we get to the other guys, I'll go there. Eric Cole, 8,700. We haven't talked about him, but he's in that price range. I'm not interested in him, but he is fifth short game total in wins. These are wins above 19 miles per hour, which we will get this week.
Okay.
And then let's see, anyone else, any of these higher price guys, Keegan, is up there. Sung Jae is up there. And then if we're looking at Cam Young is 31st in the field. Harmon is 34th in the field, which is pretty good because you have all mixtures of guys kind of around here. Xander, 39th. So that's about it for them. But there's a couple guys who are ranked very, very highly who I really like.
So one thing I would say, Matt, and this goes back to kind of the par five comment I made, is not all wind players created equal, right? So I think, like, Eric Cole playing Bermuda really well in high winds could be irrelevant this week, yeah, because of the type of golf course. So not to I think it's definitely worth looking at, and I certainly look at it from a first round leader perspective. Would you use it as a bonus as opposed to a deciding factor?
Oh yeah, definitely. I would say a bonus, you know. And I just edited a bit to not include either very easy or easy courses. This is either moderate, difficult, or very difficult. Perfect. Only,
yeah.
And now it definitely changes it. Now you got Shoffley as first, Harmon as fifth.
That makes, to me, that makes more sense because that factors in how they've played in majors, I think.
And it takes out the Bermudas of the world.
That, like, I don't look at Eric Cole and think, oh, he's going to be great in a knockdown wind at the Players or the Valspar, right? Like, I think he's played well in these low scoring things. So I like that you can, I think that's really important, Matt. I think that is the difference when people, I sometimes, and I'm guilty of it, I give stats for giving stats sake, right? And I think people are going, okay, well, this player is great at 20 mile an hour winds. And then when you filter it into, okay, it's 20 mile an hour winds, but it's 20 mile an hour winds on a golf course where it's tough to score, I think that then becomes relevant. I think if you just say, oh, he's great at playing the wind, it can bring in the Scottish Open or the Dunhill Links, which is, you know, 40 yard wide fairways that don't really matter. Do you know what I mean? So it's definitely something that needs to be granular, as you put in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to get the highest owned player potentially of the week, I think, in this range with Doug Gim at 8,400. And look, rightly so. Like, he was really close to my thoughts in terms of winning. I played someone else in the end that I'll come on to just purely because I think his range of outcomes are 13th and 20th as opposed to win or 20th. So I think he'd be a really solid place in people's lineups, but I don't need to go there based on the high ownership. I like Maverick McNealy, Matt, and I know it can look really like, okay, you just played well last week and you're going to just roll with it. His iron play I don't love the fact that he's got to find his irons here, would be my one pause on Maverick McNealy, but I was impressed with him. So he struggled for a lot of 2023, working his way back to form. Three Florida finishes that caught my eye. Second at the Lecompte Suncoast Classic on the Corn Ferry. Ninth last week at the Players, 11th at the Honda Classic. Played this course for the first time last year. He opened with a 67. That was one shot shy of the lowest round of the day. And on Sunday, he shot around the 70, which only four people could better as well. So on two tough scoring days, he's played really well here. Of course, 74s on the other days meant he finished 36th. But I think he could build on that in the sense of, like, he knows how to score around here when it's tough, which I'd really like to see. Sixth in Phoenix, where he's better placed after rounds one and two. 13th in Mexico, where he played really well over the weekend. Ninth last week at the Players, where he was fourth at the end of Friday and Saturday. All of that to say, Matt, I think Maverick McNealy's getting back to what he was, right? Like, he was a prospect that was struggling to get into real contention. But I think coming now onto a good golf course, I think he can break through. It just depends whether those irons can be good enough for a week.
Yeah, I'm high on him going forward, which is weird for me because I'm usually not. But
I feel like when we last talked about Maverick McNealy, you were definitely low on him. But that would be based on injury and just not seeing much in the past.
One thing I love is he's working with Butch Harmon. I mean, I think that's a fantastic development. We saw what it did with Ricky when he started recently. Brooks went back to Harmon and see what happened. And then McNealy goes back to Harmon for the first time, and then he's almost contending at the Players' Championship. So I do think a win is coming for him.
And also, like, look, it's been short game driven. There's no getting away from the fact that he's been around the green at the Players, he's been around the green at the Cognizant, but he's been really solid off the tee, which, as much as I said this is a second shot golf course, you need to put yourself in position. And the irons, although they're not great, they're just, you know, they were good at Phoenix, and then they've gradually been losing strokes, but not to a point where it's worrisome. I think it's just not quite good enough to go on and win, but good enough to kind of keep himself about, which I think is all you've really got to do at this golf course. And then he could flash with a really good iron play right round, and all of a sudden he's in contention. So I like Mav at 81.
Yeah, I do too. I'm oddly high on him. He was very close to making my betting card, and I'm going to check real quick to see if he's still like in that 80 range. I don't know if he is or not, but
he's down to like 50 or 60 down here, so I imagine he's probably gone down a little bit.
Yes,
he was 66 when I put him out last night on Odds Checker, so probably in that range.
So it probably won't be for me, but I do like him. Maybe first round leader DraftKings, I definitely like him.
Anyone else that you want to talk about? I mean, Hadwin's obviously won here in the past and played decently this season. Keegan, no good course fit, but wasn't inspired by.
I do have something to say about Hadwin.
Okay.
I wish his wife would just be quiet for a little while. I mean,
so that's not about Hadwin, to be fair. That's,
well, the social media.
You should tell her, like, to pipe down a bit, or?
Well, no, because she has all these white knights on Twitter who defend her every move, because I just don't like the attention. It seems to me like attention-seeking behavior. I don't find it that funny. I think everyone else does. It's probably going to be unpopular. All the white knights can get mad about me saying anything negative about it. But I just think your husband's a professional golfer. Maybe just let him stay in the spotlight instead of trying to grab as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, I mean, I have two trains of thought. I think one, in this modern age, people realize how important it is to be likable on social media. She's just trying to do that for him, is the one counter to what you're saying there. The second one is, yeah, just let him be it. Like, if he's funny, then let him be funny.
I just think she's trying to get her 5 minutes of fame because her husband's a professional golfer.
Also, terrible shot when he lobbed his, didn't he lob his club into the?
Yeah. And I also don't find that type of humor very funny. I know a lot of people like the, you know, it's just, to me, it's just I guess I'm just a darker person. You know, I need some darker humor than just the little quips and whatever on social. It just doesn't do it for me. And there's a lot of people.
She fits perfectly in the full swing.
Yes, exactly.
Like, really,
exactly.
Really pleasant and easy to like and good for people introduction, like, haha, it's funny on Twitter. If you see it every week, you probably get fed up of it.
Like, people think on Twitter that's funny, but like, if you're going out and having beers with somebody, is that the type of humor you'd want to have?
That's what you got to think about, haven't you? Like, when me and you say something really odd about people that people generally might not like when we say like James Harden looks like an assassin or something like that, like or whatever we've said about other people, like
the guy how many times McGurk's been divorced.
Yeah, like these sort of things genuinely make me laugh whilst they're happening. And I think that's where I know what my humor is. Look, it doesn't bother me. I don't care. So I'm not in no way, shape, form like you on it. You're definitely stronger on that. But yeah. I get it. Sip Striker 7-9. I don't think he's going to be missed, but I really like him.
I love him. I absolutely love him.
I think he can definitely win at 7-9.
Yeah, I bet him at 80-1. I was shocked by the price when it came out at 80-1.
Can't get that now, but it's just...
No, can't get it now. But the odds...
It's gone to where it should do now. Like, it's gone back to... It's corrected.
I've even seen, like, 35 in some places.
So he's 40 best price over here now, and we still think that's probably the right price. Like,
it is the right price. I can't believe he was 70, 80, 60. I mean... He's a guy who can win, and this is outright betting. We're looking for a guy who can win the tournament. He's a great long iron player, and he hasn't had a great season, but the flashes that he's shown last week, I mean, he gained over 7 strokes tee to green.
Yeah.
All you got to do is see it once, and I believe that he can win. He's a Ryder Cup player. Like, he's too good for that.
I don't want to make this an anti-Doug Gim stance. Like, he's really highly owned. He's really popular. He's playing really well, and I was very close to betting him. The difference with Sepp Straka and a player that I've directly replaced him with on my betting card is that when people look and say Sepp Straka's had a disappointing season so far, he's finished 12th, 26th and 16th already. And Doug Gim's finished that every week and everyone thinks he's a superstar. Like, it's essentially the difference is that is now kind of Straka's flaw. Of like, okay, he can have a couple of missed cuts, but generally speaking, he's going to finish inside the top 20 multiple times, and then he's going to flash with that tee to green. As soon as someone like him flashes tee to green, I'm ready. And played well. He played one time here. He finished 46th, but he was the first round leader on day one, obviously first round leader, and then he was a 69 on the third day, which is one of the better rounds as well. So two complete ejections with two rounds of 76, but he has to have matured since then, Brad. Matt, like, he was in 2019, that was, and he's a multiple winner since then. So I think it helps the fact he's only had that one start and it was a 46.
You know, I also like he's a nice big thick body in the wind. he's not going to move him around. He's going to big sturdy guy. I love just big bald head. Relatively, I just think he's a good. Thick boy, a southern boy who's actually a European.
Yeah, it's weird that he's European. Like, he's the most non-European person in the entire world. Maybe like Lou Donald, he's a little bit Chicago now, isn't he? But I think he's still underrated. I know that obviously there was a big call for him to be in the Ryder Cup team. But he's won 2022, 2023, and he's had two playoff losses in 2022 as well. Like, he lost to Zalatoris, who was destined to win at some point, and then he's lost to Mackenzie Hughes to a birdie on the second extra hole. Like, I know it's all ifs, about some maybes, but he could have had 4 wins since the start of 2022.
Yeah, I think, the more I think about it, the more I think he's going to win the tournament. I really think he has a great, great chance.
7th and 2nd in the majors last year as well, by the way.
Yeah, likes tough golf courses.
Just a great, I think he's generally a great player. And it's really weird. Like, he always used to be that person of like, you could back him first round leader on tough golf courses like Torrey Pines and stuff, because he would just go and play the South course really well. I think it was the South course he played well at. And he used to be the one, I think, that played the tougher course on the Amex well. He just stands out as one of the people that used to be able to do that. And now he's just a really good golfer. Taking him a little while to bloom, but here he is. So,
yeah.
Sepp Straka, 7,900. Definitely think he can win. You talk to me about who you like in the 7Ks rather than me just listing players out.
A lot of people are going back to Moore because I think this is the dumbest reason ever.
Because I have to, and Casey have done it.
Because other people have gone back to back who are complete different players than him. That means he's going to go back to back. I mean, Paul Casey is built perfectly for this golf course. He's one of the most talented players in the world when he wins this event. Sam Burns, same thing. Like, Taylor Moore going back-to-back is not the same as Paul Casey and Sam Burns going back-to-back.
Also, wasn't he playing really well coming in?
He was playing great coming in, yeah.
And
in the field sucked as well.
Like, all to be fair, like, to play devil's advocate in the only way I know how, KJ Choi's won twice here, Retief Goosen's won twice here, Casey's won twice here, Sam Burns won twice here. So for since 2000, this tournament has been played. It missed 2 years due to 9/11 and COVID. So there's not been that many renewals and there's been that many multiple winners to suggest that it can happen. Patrick Reed's finished runner-up a couple of times. Like, you do get these repeat performances, but just to think he's going to go back-to-back because two other people have gone back-to-back is pretty wild. He's just not playing well enough, is he?
No, I don't think he's playing well enough. He's playing like I relatively okay. I just think also last year was probably the worst field in tournament history. Remember, it got pushed and it got moved between all these elevated events. There's like nobody in the field besides Burns. Yeah.
Like, did JT play last year?
No, I don't think so.
I think he did, but he missed the cut.
Okay.
Actually, no, I don't think that's even true. I'm looking at his missed cut last week. He did play, he finished 10th. But, like, I don't think JT was playing that well at this time of the year either, was he? Like, he wasn't playing his best stuff. So, yeah, Taylor Moore, not for me. Players I do like. Lucas Glover is this one I was talking about with Doug Gim. I've directly replaced Doug Gim with Lucas Glover, and his ball striking has been great. From an iron perspective, off the tee, a little bit disappointed, but his irons have been really, really good. He's gained on approach in all but one event this season. When he did fail to gain strokes, he missed the cut. And he's this player, Matt, that I always talk to you about, where you look at it, there's probably a little bit of hidden form. So he was 12th after 36 holes last year. He was third at the same stage 3 years ago. He's also been 7th after 36 holes and 7th after 54 holes in two different times as well. So there's four times now where he's been inside the top 12 at various different stages of the tournament. It's a good, good golf course for Lucas Glover. And whilst he hasn't shown it for four whole rounds, and I think that's because his foundation has been all irons opposed to an all-round game you potentially need here. I like Lucas Glover and the way he's kind of just coming under the radar a little bit with these 30th place finishes.
Yeah, I understand the point. I'm out on Lucas Glover. I still think he's in that stage of his career and recent form where he's paying his dues for what he accomplished. You know, that happens sometimes. You win a couple big things and I still think there's ebbs and flows and peaks and valleys in the sport of golf more than anything else in the world. And I think he's still in one of those downward finish wise. I think he can still play good here and there. He might contend here and there, but I just think his steep upside is limited for the time being.
You think he owes the tour some, basically?
Yes. Yeah.
It's fine. I think for me, he just, like, if I look at the category of players like the Bill Haas, the Sean O'Hares, the people, John Sendens, the Kevin Streelmans, he just fits that so perfectly that the fact that he's shown it over so many different years, I thought was interesting. So 7-3, I think, in terms of a player that I generally believe can win in the 7Ks, I think he's one of them. Yeah. Are you high on Horschel again or no?
No, I was thinking of being it, but I looked at his course history. It was pretty bad.
Yeah. It's terrible, actually. It's three missed cuts and 56. So there's no reason for optimism. I think, yeah, just forget about him.
I was looking at Berger.
Yeah.
I think he's been hitting all right. This should be a good golf course. He is a good win player. He's pretty good on difficult courses. Is it too much too soon for him to win? I believe, yes, it is. But I still think he could play pretty good at 7,200.
I looked at him, thought it was going to be a smart play, and I realized that actually if you can't make the cut in Puerto Rico or the Honda where you've been so good, you're probably not going to do it here.
Yeah, that's probably great point.
Sam Ryder seems relatively popular.
Yeah, because he flashed towards the end of the early part of Sunday.
26 birdies last week, right? So 27 birdies, so he's best in the field. Like, but that doesn't overcome the fact that he's not been that good here. Played well last year.
He's not for me.
Anyone else in this 7K you want to talk about?
Shank has that good finish, but he's 101 in my model this week. I just think he's not playing well enough.
I think it's Victor Perez at 6-9 we need to talk about.
Oh, man, I love him.
You have said to me a couple of times, what are your thoughts on Victor Perez? One of them, you evacuated the podcast early when I just ripped into him and said he's got no chance of doing anything. And I don't think he did anything that week. And then he's come back since then And I think you asked me again, do I think he's going to do anything? And I sort of said, no, I don't think so. And he's been 16th and third the last 2 weeks, or last two starts for him. Fourth going into the final round at the Cognizant. Third in Puerto Rico, where he just generally ran out of holes. I think he would have won if that carried on for another three or four holes.
Yes.
Ball striking is immaculate. Second in ball striking, 14th in approach, 20th in tee to green.
Yeah, and he was the guy who I was going to mention who was second in strokes gained total in the wind over 19 miles per hour, who you like those stats more when they fit the guy you already like, right? So
he lives in Scotland. It makes sense. Like, he plays
all the time. And I think he's good playing hard golf courses. I think the long irons are really good from him. We skipped one other guy who I bet this week I want to go to after this, but I think Perez has a really, really good chance to contend this week. I wouldn't shock me at all if he won.
Yeah, I think he's that classy operator of, you know, look, Charles Schwartzel's won a major, he's won the Masters, Luke Donald's, you know, contending multiple, being world number one. But, like, he feels like that type of classy operator from the DP World Tour that can come over here and make an impact. Casey obviously being one of them, winning twice, maybe more of a PGA Tour player at that point. But he feels like he fits that kind of mold for me, and generally just playing well now with the ball striking. So, like him. Who do we skip over?
Cebes.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've basically gone for 360 on Bez and think he's one of the best players in the world all of a sudden. So you don't have to tell me. His approach game is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, that's what really got me. Like, he's great in his long irons from 175 plus. He's top five in the field in that stat. I think good wind player. His approach has been great. He had a great Players Championship. Shows a little bit of Florida form. I think this is something he could win.
So the old me just felt like Bezuidenhout was this kind of short game merchant that would relish up and down around here all the time. The tougher it got, the better type thing. And then when I looked into it, his best stuff was when he basically was just flashing with his irons, and that's what he's doing now. At one point, he was like the best approach player of the week of the tour. Like, it was him and Tom Hoagie, and then Scott Scheffler's obviously just lapped everyone since. But yeah, I think it's an all elite iron game at the moment.
Yeah, to add to that, I mean, why I love him so much, I get a bit of top 20 or something too, just to cover myself on the outright, or a top 10. But he's second in my model, which is not something I tend to get crazy about. But just because, so he's 15th in approaches last 24 rounds. He's sixth in good drive percentage. So that's a good drive. He could just barely miss the fairway as long as it's still a good look going into the green. Strokes gained total per round here, he's 27th, which is fine. 13th strokes gained ball striking. 16th in the field in bogey avoidance. So he's not making many bogeys. And then I sorted for strokes gained total in difficult or very difficult conditions. And he is 27th in that as well.
Nice. Yeah, I think all round, just sort of evolving into a really well-rounded player at the right time in his career. Talk about bogey avoidance. Andrew Putnam is fourth in that category. I wanted to play Andrew Putnam because of the way he'd been hitting the ball recently, 4th and 17th his last 2 weeks in strokes gained approach, and 8th and 34th tee to green. Terrible course record. 3 missed cuts.
Yeah, every time I've tried to go with him, he hasn't really done it for me, so I'm just done with my experiment.
That I just thought the bogey avoidance was interesting. I just had a glance there. I mean, it's Scheffler, Schauffele, Noren, Putnam, Zach Johnson.
Why isn't Noren playing? What the hell?
Why the fuck is Zach Johnson 5th in bogey avoidance?
Because probably he doesn't play very much, so he doesn't make many bogeys.
But it's percentage, right? So it's
no,
like,
I'm just kidding.
I know, but like,
yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I mean, maybe he just makes a million pars. That can make some sense.
I think that's what it is. Like, I think he just makes par and just doesn't make birdie. Like, it's just that. But Victor Perez 15th in bogey avoidance. Nick Taylor 16th. So I'm pretty comfortable with what we've seen out of those guys recently. Matt McNeely 20th. Up four places last week. So 6K range. Novak, I think, is going to be relatively not popular in the sense of like high energy, but just like people will like that because he's played well in Florida recently.
Yeah, he's always played well in Florida. He makes a lot of sense. I don't know how popular exactly he's going to be. I'm looking at, let me see, about, yeah, 12%, which is a lot for a guy at 6,700, so I'll probably just lay off.
Is Neesmith higher than that?
Neesmith. What price is he?
65.
I get him a little lower.
Okay. I think those guys are going to be these popular players in this 6K range.
Yeah, I think so too. Let's see. Guy who rates out really well for me is, I think you like this guy, Ben Silverman.
Yeah. Seems really solid at the moment, playing well.
Yeah. Wallace, I always like to go to on hard courses. I know he's been a little bit off lately, but.
Was this the one he won last year?
Did he what?
Well, didn't he nearly win this last year?
Oh. Was it this?
Wasn't this where he like dressed down his caddy and everyone hated him?
Probably was.
He finished seventh here last year, so he was seventh after the last three rounds, but I think he was closer than that at one point during the final round. Like, I think he had a chance to get himself in contention and just, I'm sure he hit like a stone or something and it just, I don't know what happened, but I vividly remember Matt Wallace being around the lead here last year. So good point to what you like about players like that. I thought Bob Cawley was interesting. But I talked about Bob Cawley and how he came back after so long and being quite impressed with him, but look, he finished 16th on debut here and he's been literally nothing since, but he just strikes me as someone who can just plod his way around to a 20th.
Yeah, he's played good recently. You've told me he's going to win a bunch of times so far. That's never come to fruition.
No, that's not true.
Shouldn't this be a good Alexander Bjork course?
It should. Yeah, it should. I think if there's a time where he's going to come to fruition on the PGA Tour, it's when you take driver out of his hand a bit. I think the problem I have with him, and this applies maybe to Bez as well, but not such an extreme example, it's helpful that the driver's not in their hand as much, but when it is and when it is needed here, which it is, have they got it?
Yeah.
Like, because we've already said at the start of the show, you have to take advantage of those par fives. There are par fours where you have to just stand up and hit a good drive. Like, and I don't think I'm not too worried about Bazim out in that respect, but less so. But Bjork particularly, I think that, like, people will see it as like it's a course where short hitters can play well, so let's play him. And I think that would be my pause in it. Is like, I still think you have to hit good drives.
Yeah, and just one quick thing that came to my mind. Seabez, we've had some South Africans really play well here, like Louis and Charles, so I think that might be good.
And Retief Goosen won it twice.
Yeah, that's right.
So there you go. Ryan Moore, for some reason, feels like he should play well this week. Like, I don't think in 2024 I want to get my hopes up on Ryan Moore, but I've already done Aaron Baddeley a few times this year, so maybe Ryan Moore fits in that kind of mold.
He keeps rating out so well for me that I looked at his finishes and he just completely sucks every week. So I think
it's really weird that statistically looks like he's going to like come through. And look, he's had a third and a fifth here in the past, 19th and 18th on top of that. I think if Ryan Moore is going to play well in 2024, it's here.
I think that's probably true, but I think there's definitely a solid chance he doesn't play well in 2024.
It's just a huge if, right? Like, he was ninth going into the weekend in Mexico, finished 60th, and he was 22nd going into the weekend. The players finished 45th. I think he plays well for a couple of rounds and pisses off.
What about Vegas at 6,100? That's pretty cheap.
Do we keep having this Vegas conversation? It just doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I think we do. But
like, we thought he was back when he was 22nd at the Phoenix, and then was just shit in Mexico.
Yeah. What has he done since then? Anything else?
Nothing. Not played since. So it's maybe. Am I just being unfair because he's only had one middling round since playing since finishing 22nd? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty decent buy low spot. That's really cheap.
There's also one bad round. It's 75 on Sunday. I would just, like, he feels like a Jason Kokrak loot list type player that could do well around here. And he was the first round leader a couple of years ago. I think I would bank on him playing well for a round as opposed to. And he pulled out a couple of years ago, didn't he?
Oh, that's right.
Because I bet him first round leader and he withdrew, so concerning.
That's a little concerning. Where did Wacky Valimaki compete? Was that Honda?
No, Mexico.
Oh.
That's purely Paspalum, I think.
Okay, yeah, never mind.
That's my thing with Sammy at the moment. Do we just go to Zach Johnson because he's avoiding bogeys?
Hell no.
He's actually played all right this year, though. Like, I think I talked about him as like a top 40 at the I don't know where it was, probably at the Phoenix where he finished 60th, but like he was 21st at the Honda and 25th at the Amex.
Wow, it's very good for him.
And like he's had three top 25 finishes here. I think he can finish 20th.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it's a buy low spot on Zach Johnson if there ever is one, because people fucking hate him after that full swing thing.
Buy low and he's still dirt cheap.
Yeah, buy low at 6K. Like, yeah. Have you watched this full swing in full yet?
No, I haven't. Got my wife, I keep saying, want to watch this or Love is Blind. She keeps choosing Love is Blind. So
let's get Love is Blind off, and you need to watch Zach Johnson in full flow. He is the nut. Not low of human beings. I absolutely adored Zach Johnson, and I can't get out of my head how much I hate him right now.
Oof.
And I'm not even American, so it shouldn't affect me in any way, shape, or form.
I was rooting hard for the European, so I'm sure I won't hate him as much as most people.
Oh, he was terrible.
But the guy in Love is Blind looked just like Justin Thomas, so.
That's weird. Fake tough guy, Justin Thomas, by the way.
Oh, yeah, he is.
I mean, I'm not saying I'd beat him up because I'm weak as shit, but like it feels like
I'd definitely beat him up.
Yeah, he'd get mouthy to the wrong person and die, I think.
Oh yeah.
Let's get back on track.
speaking of washed up guys.
Yeah.
Stuart Singh. Is Molinari gonna make a move?
Dead. He's
okay.
Dead. Well, I thought we were gonna go Stuart Singh 5900.
No.
Okay, so there's a vote each for former Open champions.
I want to go back to ADDC here. I've been going to him a couple of weeks, and I know he hasn't been good, but then in Puerto Rico, he was great. He was finishing, I think, in the top five or the top 10. So he's a guy who I think maybe very buy low, 5,400.
It's weird we've got these really low prices again. Is this just the norm now?
I think it is.
Yeah, like if you're going down to this range, you're in trouble, I think.
Yeah.
People seem to like Fred Biondi for some reason. He's 5K. So if you really want to do that, then fine. I don't really want to be playing someone that people are interested in at 5K. Peter Malnati feels like he's playing a little bit better recently.
No,
absolutely not. Austin Cook, 5,800. Interesting. Playing decent golf, played well here in the past. He's been the 36-hole leader. And then people like Ricky Castillo because he played well. He came out of the University of Florida and he's playing really well on the Corn Ferry Tour. So I get that at 5,900. But
maybe that's why Biondi, he's University of Florida as well.
Yeah, there you go. I think they might have even been teammates. Matt, I think that's it. We're just naming names at this point.
Yeah.
We're talking about beating people up, so we should probably get to the end of the show. Favorite play above 10s?
JT.
Only player above 10s for you?
Yep.
Nice. I think it's Burns for me, but I can see the argument against. Nick Taylor, 9-1 for me in that range.
I can't tell lies. There's no one in the 9Ks I'm going to be playing.
Good. 8K range.
Seabez, I absolutely love. I like that he's really expensive too. I just think such a great spot. I'm in love with my bets this week, so it's probably a bad thing, but I love him. He's and then Gim, I'm not going to play, but I do think he has a chance to play well. And then Mav in the low eights, I really like.
I think if you start with Mav and end with Bazin out in that range, you're doing well. Sepp Straka, I love at 7,900. Think he's going to win the tournament.
Yes.
And then I do like Lucas Glover at 7,300. Any others you like at sevens?
For me, I absolutely love Straka as well. And anyone else?
I guess at 69 as well.
Yeah, I mean Perez, I absolutely love. I'm locking him.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in Perez. Let's build. I don't think we need to go down to who we love in the 6Ks that we've just literally discussed. That I don't think we need to round that back up. Let's start our sort of lineup with Perez as the anchor, with Sepp Straka, with Mav McNealy. Let's put JT in there for your benefit. It gives us 7,900 left. I think that's the problem. It leaves me in a range. I don't feel inspired by Moore, Putnam, Mollison, Montgomery, Horschel, Todd, Glover. I love Glover, but 73, leaving 600 on the table.
Yeah, I mean, so we already have Strock in there, right?
So we've got JT, Bez, McNeely, Perez, Straka.
And you got 7,900 left.
Yeah. So unless you go from McNeely and go up a bit and leave yourself and then go low. Like if you get, so I quite like this actually. So we leave out McNeely and we go with JT, who you love. We both love Sepp Straka and I love Nick Taylor. Then you've got Bezine out, Victor Perez, and then we've got 6,900 left. I think that actually might be the better way to go.
I do too, because I think you do want to have a, the top guys do play well here. I think it would be nice to have one along with those other guys you think can win. And then, so you got some room there in the high sixes. I would say
you've got Kevin Yu, Jimmy Stanger. Stanger was interesting actually. Joel Damon, 68. Mackenzie Hughes, 67.
Silverman or
65. I think there's a lot. Then you can basically take your pick in the 66s or below.
Yeah, and that's a good place. I mean, I don't think there's not much difference between a guy who's 6,100 and a guy who's 6,800. I think it's basically the same thing. Play Zach Johnson if you want.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to. Not after that documentary. But yeah, cool. I like it. Yeah, put who you want in there. Plug and play. For the argument of the show, let's put Silverman in there at 6,500. Or Neesmith. I like Neesmith, actually. That's another one I like in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Matt, that's the Valspar. We're getting closer and closer to the Masters. Only 3 weeks now. Matt, question for you live, putting you on the spot here. I am out watching football on the Monday of the Masters. So my idea is that we potentially do an early look show on the Sunday if prices are out to discuss our early bets as well. And then I'll do my final betting on the Tuesday with Brad, which then might also have you there as well. So I think potentially programming note where you might do something on the Sunday.
Yeah, I love doing that. I think we did it for all the majors last year. I think it worked out really well.
Yeah, so let's pencil that in unless anything comes up. We're planning to do the Sunday. I just want everyone to have the kind of idea in their head that we're doing Sunday, Tuesday, or rather than the Monday that week.
Yeah, and then the betting thing, I mean, I think it would be nice to. I've never done a show with Brad before. I think it would be kind of good.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get that kind of penciled in as well. So, Matt, I think that's it. Anything else you want to leave us with?
No, I think I'll make a guarantee towards the end of the show here because I feel very strongly this week. One of, and these are all three relatively longer odd guys, I think one of Cibes, Straka, or Victor Perez will be in one of the final two groups on Sunday this week.
That's a pretty solid guarantee, I think. I'm going to go further and just say Sepp Straka is going to win.
Yeah, but I mean,
that's a really tough guarantee. I would love to go like one of Sepp Straka or Nick Taylor wins. I feel so strongly about both of those.
I mean, I think you're still getting 25-1 on that, so I think that's pretty good.
There we go. There's a couple of good guarantees from us.
There we go. Let's do it.
Shoot us when they all miss the cut this week.
That's what's good about golf. We'll just talk about something else next week.
Yeah, we'll just cover that up. Paper of Matt, thanks as ever, bud. And I'll catch you in a week.
All right, good luck.